Hello and welcome to the Extremis Publishing Podcast. I'm Tom Christie, and it's a great pleasure to be joined today by a brand new friend of the podcast. He's also a brand new author here at Extremis Publishing, and he's here to tell us all about his new book, Making History, My Life as a Scottish Metal Detectorist. His name is Alan Baxter. He comes from here in the central region of Scotland, and I'm delighted to introduce him today. Alan, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks, Tom. Yep. Pleased to be here.
Well, thanks very much for joining us to talk about your brand new book. And I must say, it's been a fascinating read. I couldn't believe how many things you've been able to discover right the way throughout the central region. Would you like to tell us a bit more about how you got started?
I started in 2012. My dad got me into the hobby. Maybe it was about September 2011. I started up detecting Falkirk, the first permission. My very first coin was a silver Roman Denari in Nerva. It was 97 AD. Ever since then I was hooked. And the same permission in 2015 unearthed an Iron Age hoard. I remember it well. It was an elaborate turret ring we found. And from then on in we had an excavation with the National Museum. They came along and we found another in situ turret ring. Also, we found a tanker handle, but that was just around about before we found the excavation with the turret ring. And we found a Roman brooch that was slightly out of the excavation area, and now it's on display in Callander House.
Yeah, because your discoveries in the Falkirk area, I mean, they were the most significant in decades, weren't they?
Yeah, since August 1933, they found a Roman hoard when building Falkirk bus station. The council worker was digging there, and all these Roman denarii spilled out of the pot, which is amazing. So that's been almost 100 years, the best part of 100 years, most significant find in the district, yeah.
And then your discoveries took you to the Lothians, and brand new discoveries there.
Yes, it did, yeah. It was a medieval seal I found there, Papa Bulla, Pope Nicholas III. It was a lead seal attached to a document. It was actually stamped in Rome, so it was an important document it was attached to. I also found a Bronze Age axe head. It was dated to 1500 BC, so it's roughly 3,500 years old. So that was a really significant find for us, because it's really hard to find Bronze Age axe heads due to the population at the time. It was quite a deep target, actually. It was found at depth, bigger objects. It was maybe 12 inches down. And we pulled out the soil, and it was an amazing feeling, you know, but I've never found one since. They're really scarce things to find, you know. But that was pleasing, yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, most excitingly of all, you then made your way to the Kingdom of Fife, and you hit on a site there, didn't you, that's changed everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that was spectacular. It started off a bit slow, it was 2018. I found a medieval ring first, I think. Then it was bits and bobs. The odd hammer coin, medieval coin, odd mount or two. Then I came across John Balliol Farthen. It's a really small coin, it's only 0.3 grams of silver, but the fingernail is really, really small coin. They've got three denominations, silver coins back then in 1292. You've got the penny, you've got the half penny, and the farthing. The farthing is so small, they're all silver. I remember unearthing that. It was off a night shift, and it was just amazing. It's so rare. And found another John Balliol Farthen as well. So to find two, the only two in Scotland, it's just amazing. The other one was found in Suffolk in 1997. It's just extraordinary. But then we detected other permissions during that time, just the odd permission, due to the conditions, the actual farming conditions that weren't ideal. The stubble was high, and we didn't actually go over the hot spot where we actually had a big explosion of finds when the carrots got lifted in 2022. So it's all down to conditions. You can go over a field and there can be lots of things there and they just get missed, because medieval objects are generally really thin. So when the carriage got lifted in 2022, we just couldn't move. It was every 3 feet. You're getting medieval lead, medieval tin, medieval strap ends, medieval buckles, medieval loop fasteners. Coinage was everywhere. In one specific area, we found a James III farthing hoard, copper coinage, They were dated to 1466 AD. It's quite a tight chronology. They were a type A farthing, they're the earliest farthing of James III, the first copper coinage in Scotland, if not the UK, medieval coinage. We found 52 of these. It was like a tap, it just didn't stop, you know. I knew how rare they were because I know my coinage, because I actually collect coins. But the feeling you get from that, it was just unbelievable. I think we pulled out 20 in one night. It was a summer's night in August. And over the course of a few weeks, we ended up pulling out the rest, another 30, you know. And these coins are just so rare. The last hoard of that type was found in 1919 at Cross Ragoul Abbey in Ayrshire, down a latrine. They excavated the latrine down the bottom, the silt, and they found coins of the similar type. So that's a mega rarity as well. And we also found a Malcolm Farthing as well. That's extraordinary. I think it's the third Malcolm Farthing ever. Coinage of Malcolm is so rare. So to get all these anomalies, it's just incredible, the rarity of these coins, the Malcolm, the two Balliol farthings, the James III hoard, and collectively with all these medieval mounts, you know, it's just a complete one-off. With the sandy soil, everything was kept pristine, the copper was just unbelievable condition. I don't think there's another site like it in Scotland, because 9 times out of 10 the soil will just destroy copper and there'll be nothing left. So it's a really good example of maybe a hybrid settlement, maybe a village and a market site. We don't really know, but there's definitely something going on there. It was important, it was in my hands and my dad's hands to let the world know how important it actually was, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing, because somebody like yourself who has a really keen interest in numismatics, this is a really exciting discovery, but it's something that's really significant generally, you know, in terms of socio-cultural history, because what's the difference? What's the likelihood of someone finding a Scottish coin here in central Scotland in comparison to, say, England? I mean, there's a huge differential, isn't there?
Yeah, well, in the Fife site, I'd say it was 1 in 6. That's excluding the hoard, actually. If you include the hoard, it goes down to 1 in 4. The further down in the borders of Scotland, it goes to 1 in 20. And roughly, if you go right down to southern England, it's 1 in 100. Obviously, there's less Scottish coins getting minted because the population in medieval times is roughly 250,000, which is really small. So they didn't need to churn out as many coins. So that's why they're much rarer, you know. That's in general. I don't know what it's like outside the UK. Maybe you do get some in Holland, they do a bit of trading back and forth, but that's the general numbers for that. Yeah, much rarer in England, and about 1 in 6 in Fife. Down the borders, 1 in 20, 1 in 100 in England.
So with so many amazing discoveries there in Fife, and of course in your other excavations as well, is there any particular artefact that you would say is a favourite, or you know, are there too many to mention now?
Collectively, it's just phenomenal. It's hard to pick out an artifact, to be honest. And I know the medieval ring's spectacular, but it's just, well, even the mounts, 95 belt mounts, you just do not get them in any site in Scotland. It's just so rare. Like I say, the copper is well preserved. Even the collection of mounts is probably comparable to the medieval ring. And for me, the mounts is maybe comparable to a John Balliol farthing. Mm-hmm. So collectively, I would say it's hard to put an object there out there as my favourite, but for a rush, I would say it was the farthing hoard, because I knew it's not just about finance, it's about the rarity as well. I knew that was just something special, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting reading your book, because you do point out they did handle their money very carefully back then, you know, so to find so much of it is amazing.
That's right. I mean, you look at it there, the occupation of the site, roughly it was one every year it was dropped, so that's absolutely nothing. So they're really, really careful with their money.
So having found all of these amazing things, was there any point where you thought this would be a really good subject for a book, or was it more of a gradual process as you came to realise just how significant all these things were?
It came about it was Murray Cook. I've seen my friends on Facebook, and I showed them privately in messages, and they got me in touch with you guys, and that's how it worked. He says, I've got some publishers here that could maybe write you a book. I says, I've always thought about that. And he goes, well, here's your email address, and then it just took off there. I emailed Julie, and that was it.
Yeah.
There. So it was just out of the blue.
Because I must say, the thing that we've really enjoyed about the book, you know, in terms of putting it together and editing it and looking at all the various different artifacts, is the fact that everything you've photographed with such great detail, there's so much clarity in the images that you've taken.
Yeah.
And it really brings the whole thing alive.
Yeah, that's right. I know that once I get an object, once I've got it and I've handed it in the museum, I'm not going to get a second chance to take a picture. So I thought, I'm going to take a picture of everything before I hand in, just for my own records. But I never intended for it to go in a book, which is amazing, you know. But I was really precise in taking a picture. I like a good picture, because I'm never going to get a chance to do that again.
Yeah. And your book is fully illustrated with, you know, proper colour images of all the different things that you've recovered. Is there any one sort of particular thing that you're really proud of? Because you do mention the medieval ring, and that's a really striking cover image.
Yeah, that's right. I'd say for the medieval ring, the lighting was perfect, the clarity of the ring, and the way I've took the ring is I've done a really good job of there. I'm proud of that, yeah. And as you say, the front cover, it's looking good, yeah.
And quite something when you initially mentioned you thought it was a bottle cap, and yet to find it was something so much more special than that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was near a road, and next to roads you generally get tin cans. I remember pulling it out, it was April 2018. It was a bright summer's day, and I just remember pulling out the ground and thinking, you know, that looks like a Diet Iron Brew bottle top to the edges, and it just fell through, and I was just like, this is a ring. And I didn't know it was a medieval ring at that point, so I had it dipped face down, didn't have it at the side, and I just wiped away some of the dark sand, and I could just see the Lombardic writing, and it was so clear, because it's been coated in gold, this ring, so it's protected it from tarnishing. Silver normally tarnishes and goes a grey colour, and obviously the gold's protected that, so it just came out like it was new. And the big Lombardic S, I was just like, wow, that's amazing. You know, that was happy for about 3 days after that. I couldn't go over that. So I knew it was one of the best examples of a fed ring, you know, a betrothal ring. There's not many found in Scotland of that calibre. It's a high calibre at 9.5 grams of silver. That's 8 medieval coins. Mm. And a day's pay is 1 medieval coin, so that's 8 days' pay. Plus you've got to pay for the manufacturer, for the guy to mould it. And then it's got to get dipped in gold and taken back out. So, I mean, that's not for the normal person, you know, the normal, shall we say, peasant person at that time.
Yeah, you'd really need to be someone to have a ring like that. So it's all the more amazing that you found it where you did, you know, just so randomly.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not going to divulge this, the actual location too much, yeah, but I kind of had a rough idea of what was there at that time. So I didn't expect it, to be honest, but yeah, it's amazing.
Well, we're all really glad you did find it, because now it's there for people to enjoy. They can come and see it. And
yeah, that's right.
That leads me on to the next question, of course, which is, if people want to see some of your artefacts on display, where are they to be found?
Yeah, I know the Papal Bulla and the Toy Hammer is still on display on Lithgow, as far as I'm aware. And definitely, obviously, Calendar House, the Iron Age Wars there, the Tanker Tandle. The Tourette ring's on display as well there, and it wasn't displayed in Kirkcaldy Galleries. The ring just got taken off display, I don't know, 6 months ago, but yeah, I don't know if the actual finds at the National Museum are going to go on display at some point. We'll have to wait and see.
So that leads me on to my next question, of course, which is, you know, where are you headed for next with your metal detecting? Are you still in the same area of Fife, or do you have other permissions in mind?
Yeah, we're still in the same area. We're just waiting for the conditions to be right. They're not right just now, so we're just waiting for essentially the next plough. But you know, with this book coming out, it's good ammunition for future permissions to show the landowner. I like a good portfolio, and there's nothing better than this book for a portfolio. So I'm hoping that might help me. I've got one or two farms in mind. It's just getting round to actually getting the time to do this. Going down and see the farmers, so that's where I stand just now.
Yeah, and one thing, of course, that must be said for your book, you're very generous with your advice to potential new metal detectorists about how they can get involved in what is really a very interesting hobby, but you also, of course, mention all of the other things that perhaps people don't think about, you know, going out in cold conditions and, you know, sometimes if the weather's not great, you know, to get out there and really try and find those discoveries that just take that bit of extra effort to track down. So what would you say is your top advice for people who are just looking to get into it for the first time?
I would say don't invest too much money initially. It may not be for you. Maybe go for a mid-range metal detector. You can maybe pick one up second-hand, maybe off eBay, things like that. Go on group digs. There's plenty of group forums if you search them online. You can get advice off of the guys. They'll guide you through the metal detecting procedure, how to find stuff about metal detector use, how to set up your metal detector and such things. But don't invest too heavily initially, just like any other hobby, I suppose, just in case you don't like it. That's my bit of advice, Tom.
Yeah, that's great. And I have to ask, of course, now that you've put together all of your recollections and your discoveries, do you think there could be a second volume to come sometime in the years ahead?
Well, it's all dependent on the plough, you know. potentially, you know, it could be a volume two. And it's a lot of work writing a book, and it's my first book, and it's been hard work. Sometimes I've been swilling whether to continue, but I'm glad I did and it's done. Because there's a lot of hard work went into that, because it's a factual book and you've got to make sure all your facts are right and put on point. I think there could be a volume two. It just all depends on what the plough brings up, what new permissions I get. I'm hopeful it's doable. So wait and see.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that you persisted as well, because it really is such a remarkable book. There are so many interesting stories, so many unexpected finds, and of course all of it you know, fully illustrated with those colour photography images that you've put together yourself. So I mean, I think anyone who has even an outside interest in Scottish culture and heritage and history will find so much here that really will fascinate them, and to think that it's right there beneath our feet just waiting to be discovered by somebody like yourself that's had the skill and the patience to track it down, you know, that really is icing on the cake.
Yeah, that's right. You think about these objects that have been sitting in the ground, especially, like they say, the Tourette ring, that's 50 BC. It's been sitting through all that time, all the wars, sitting through the Renaissance, the battles of independence, you know, and all that time, the First World War, the Second World War, still sitting in the soil, still sitting there. And I come along and bring it up after over 2,000 years, the first person to touch that for thousands of years with human hands.
Yeah.
It's just extraordinary. And it's like with the Tourette ring, you could, why were they down there? What were they wearing? As votive, I think, scooping it into the soil ritual. What did they wear? What kind of language did they speak at the time? I think it was Cumbric, a language called Cumbric. No idea. I mean, if that Tourette ring could tell you a story, it would be unbelievable.
Yeah, and I mean, isn't that, it's a huge privilege for you being the first person in hundreds, if not thousands of years to handle an object like that. But it's just as much of a privilege for us to be editing it, you know, and to bring all of these stories together in the book that you've produced. You know, that's what makes it special.
Yeah, that's right. It's a privilege for me, you know, you guys as well, taking me on with my first book, giving me guidance through the last year and a half, 2 years. Your advice has been great. And it's been a lot of hard work, especially having two kids and coming in working full time, getting the time to do that. A wee hour at night at 9 o'clock, then your eyeballs are rolling in your head, you know. It's been tough, but it's been well worth it, you know, well worth it to get that out there. And I hope everybody enjoys the read.
Well, thanks very much for joining us today, Alan. It's been really great to talk to you about this book. I know that we're really excited about it and, you know, getting it out there to everybody who has an interest in Scotland and history and culture and in all of the stories behind the different artefacts that you've recovered. You know, I would suggest to anyone out there that if this is your area, if this is something that you're interested in, you will find so much to enjoy in this book and so much that you will find relatable, not just to the present day, but to all those different historical eras, you know, from the Romans to the medieval. So you really won't want to miss it. So thanks, Alan, for sharing with us your stories today.
Yeah, that's no problem, Tom. It's given me a privilege. Thanks very much.
Making History, My Life as a Scottish Metal Detectorist by Alan Baxter is available to buy now from all good independent booksellers and online retailers worldwide, so I hope you'll get your copy soon. Thanks very much everyone for having joined us today. I hope that you'll tune in again soon, and in the meantime, wishing you all the best.